Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's talk, given by Lama Kathy Wesley, is entitled Path of Compassion, Path of Bodhisattvas, Part 1, The Bodhisattva Attitude. Finding purpose and meaning in life is a quest we all pursue. According to Buddhist teachings, every being has Buddha nature, the capacity to wake up to ultimate truth, and this provides great meaning and purpose to our lives. We discover this potential and this path through developing bodhicitta, the mind of awakening. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
I want to thank all of the Shrine team for working so hard this week to put together our Tibetan New Year Shrine. The word for New Year in Tibetan is Losar. L-O means year, and Sar, S-A-R, means new. Losar means New Year. And so the beginning of the Buddhist calendar year, which is a lunar calendar, begins tomorrow. My intention in the first part of what we're talking about today is just to, number one, wish you a happy new year. See, this is what's so great about living in America. We get new year at least three times a year. Four, if we're Jewish, right? And so then we have, we have the solar new year for the Julian calendar on January 1st. We have the Chinese New Year, and then we have the Tibetan New Year, and then we have the Jewish New Year. So we've got everything. We've got three. We get to go. You know what I like about this? A lot of people think that New Year's is about starting over, kind of getting to do a redo on one's life, you know? So we get a redo. We get a do-over, so it's pretty cool, actually. So anyway, I want to thank our Shrine team for helping put together our Losar Shrine, which has a lot of traditional Tibetan Buddhist offerings that will be explained in a little more detail next week. Because here at our center, we have our main community Sangha meetings for meditation on Sundays. And because we have our main community gatherings for meditation on Sundays, it was my executive decision. I get a couple every year, and they mostly have to do with the religious calendar. So my executive decision has been that we will celebrate as a community the new year on the Sunday after the holiday. And so the holiday is tomorrow, and we will be here, by the way, at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning if you want to show up. You can sit and meditate while we chant. You can help us chant or whatever. You can tell your boss, look, I'm a Buddhist. I need the morning off to go to prayers. Did I say that out loud? Yeah, okay. I will sign letters for people. You can come tomorrow morning and be with us in prayer at 8 o'clock, or if praying and chanting that early in the morning is not for you, you can sit and meditate, and if you snore, we'll just poke you. It's fine. We've had people come and sit and meditate while we're chanting, and it's delightful. So you have all kinds of opportunities to participate tomorrow. That's Monday, what is tomorrow? 24th. From 8 a.m. to 9:30, we will be here. Now, next Sunday, we will explain the New Year's offerings in detail, and we'll walk you through a traditional Tibetan Losar offering ceremony, which you're going to love because it includes throwing things in the air. There is an audience participation component. It consists of taking a white scarf, we will have them on hand, up to the throne of His Holiness Karmapa and offering a white scarf, which symbolizes your pure motivation. You'll offer a white scarf as for a good fortune in the new year to His Holiness Karmapa. Then you will go to the chamar, which is the traditional Tibetan New Year's offering container. One side has wheat berries, and the other side has barley flour. And those are like the staple grains in the highlands of Tibet. And so often on the new year, Tibetans will file past their teacher's throne, making offerings to the teacher for the new year. And then they'll take a little pinch of the wheat berries and toss them in the air for good fortune and generosity for the whole year long. And then the same with the sampa, the barley flour. And then you'll be receiving a little gift from the Lama of the center. Anyhow, so we're going to have some fun. And I think, is there cake? If there's not cake, there will be lots of cookies, I'm sure. So that's a little bit about next week. So if you come next week, we'll be doing those activities, I believe, starting at 10:30. I think we're going to, we might conclude the meditation. Oh, I'm sorry. No, that's a different program. But we'll start them next week after meditation. So today, I wanted to share with you something that I think is super valuable for the new year, and that is the practice of bodhicitta. As you know, next week we're going to be offering the refuge ceremony for anyone who wishes to formally step upon the Buddhist path and start their Buddhist practice. We're going to be doing that next Saturday in the morning at the Center for Pragmatic Buddhism, which is our Saturday meeting place. Because the synagogue is very busy on Saturdays, we have our Saturday meetings in other locations. So next Saturday in the morning, between 10 and noon, I will be giving a talk on the taking of refuge, and I will be giving the refuge ceremony for anybody who wishes to start the Buddhist path. And then that afternoon, from 1 until 3, Kathy Lamo, one of our senior meditation instructors, is going to be giving a program on what to do once one has taken refuge, how to practice daily as a Buddhist. And so I guess you could call it one-stop shopping. You can hear about the refuge ceremony in the morning and either take it or witness it. And then in the afternoon, you can learn about whether you take refuge or not, you can listen to the teaching on how a person practices as a Buddhist in everyday life. And then next Sunday, in the afternoon, right after the Dharma talk is over, we're going to have a few snacks. But then after that, I'm going to give a program on taking the Bodhisattva vow. And then I will be giving the Bodhisattva vow to people who wish to take it. I can give it to people who are taking it for the first time, and I can also give it as a renewal for people who have taken it before. My teacher, Kempo Carter Rinpoche, once told me that these types of things are good to renew as much as possible. So if people want to come and renew their refuge vow on next Saturday morning, come on down to Center for Pragmatic Buddhism. And if you would like to take the Bodhisattva vow or renew it, we'll be here next Sunday after the Dharma talk. So I figured that teaching about the Bodhisattva vow is it's a lot. It's a very big subject. And so I thought I would split the teaching into two parts. I'm going to give the first part of the teaching now, and then I'll give the second part of the teaching next week. But because of the magic of our podcast, you will be able to listen to both of these online in the coming weeks. So we'll start with that. I'm going to start my teaching, as I normally do, with a recitation of the refuge prayer. This is a prayer you can recite if you're familiar with it. If you're unfamiliar with it, you can join in your heart and in your mind, thinking that you are in this short Dharma lecture for the benefit of yourself and for the benefit of beings. We'll recite this prayer, refuge prayer in English, one time. In the Buddha, the Dharma, and the assembly most excellent, I take refuge until I reach enlightenment. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may I achieve enlightenment for the sake of all beings. Okay, thank you. And then I'll recite a short prayer of my own, and then we'll begin.
Sonji chodon so chi chonam la chan chu badu tani chapsu chi da ji jin so ji pe so nam ji dro la pen chi son ji dro par sho. Sem chen tam ji dewa tan dewe kyu tan den par yu chi dunya tan dunya ki kyu tan tra wa ju chi. Dunya me be dewa tam ba tam hen tra wa ju chi nirin chan dan dan dro we tan yen chen pula ne par ju chi. O Palden Sawe Lama Rinpoche Dagi Chihor Pete Denshala Kadrin Jembo Gwene Je Sunde Kusun Tuking Udrup Sal Dusun.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so how do we talk about enlightenment? Do we talk about enlightenment? How do we talk about something that is so profound and yet so accessible? I know that sounds weird. It's profound and it's accessible. And the reason I say those two things together is because even though the Buddha, Shakyamuni, attained his enlightenment 2,500 years ago in India, and we might think, well, that was long ago and far away, he nevertheless gave us teachings that we could train ourselves with and train ourselves with and practice and accomplish the exact same state as he did. When people went to the Buddha Shakyamuni and tried to pin divinity on him, they said, okay, just tell us, which of the Hindu gods are you really? He denied being any of the gods. He denied being a messenger of the gods. He denied being a prophet. He denied being any of these things. He says, I am a human being. And they said, but are you an ordinary human being? And he said, I am an enlightened, awakened being. So that put him in between being ordinary and being divine. He was an awakened being. And what was he awakened from? He was awakened from the ignorance about suffering and its causes. Now, if you wonder about this, this actually was quite a mystery for him in his life. When he was still Prince Siddhartha, living in his palace, living the good life and all of those things, he had this gnawing sense inside of him that there was more, that the wealth and the power and all of this sort of thing, it was just not sufficient. And when he was confronted with the suffering of his people as he toured the kingdom one day and was struck by aging, sickness, death, and saw how his people suffered, he realized that even if he became the greatest king that ever lived, even if he opened the treasury and gave away all of the kingdom's money, he would still not solve the problem of suffering, the suffering of aging, the suffering of sickness, and the suffering of death. And so he left his son and princely heir in the care of his father, and he left his wife in the care of his stepmother, and he then set out on a quest to find the causes of suffering and the solutions to suffering. And after 6 long years of meditation, he realized the truth and found the truth that we now call the experience of awakening or enlightenment. And he did this through his training. He did this through his own accomplishment of meditation. And when he was asked by others to teach his path, he gave the teaching that we now know as the Four Noble Truths, that suffering is part of life, that suffering has a cause, that it has a solution, and that there's a path that leads to the end of suffering. That suffering is part of life. We may know and we may not know. We may know that there is suffering in our life, but we may somehow fail to see its causes. And therefore, we may either blame ourselves or blame others and not really see the truth of suffering in our life. And this is why the Buddha taught the truth of the causes of suffering. And he said the cause of suffering is clinging and fixation. We cling to and fixate upon everything, people, situations, money, you name it, we cling to it. And because we cling so tightly, we hurt so much. And this is the cause of suffering that the Buddha taught about in his second noble truth. And the third noble truth just follows logically on the second, because if something has a cause, that cause can be unmade. And so the solution to suffering is learning how to let go of clinging and fixation. But because letting go of clinging and fixation is not something people can automatically know how to do, he taught the fourth of the noble truths, the path that leads to the end of suffering, the path that teaches us how to let go. And this was his Eightfold Noble Path, which can be summarized in the four statements: do no harm whatsoever, practice virtue as much as you can, and tame your mind. This is the teaching of the Buddha. And so through these practices of not harming ourselves, not harming others, taking care of ourselves and benefiting others, and taming our mind through meditation, we can learn how to let go of the fixations and clingings that are the causes of our suffering. And the Buddha then went on to teach for 45 years. Teaching, he wandered all over northern India, teaching about the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Noble Path. He taught again and again and again, different formulations to different audiences. And those teachings after his death eventually were written down as the sutras or the scriptures of the Buddhist tradition. And you could see progression in his teaching. When he first started teaching, he was teaching mainly about the mind. In the Book of Sayings, the Dhammapada, he says, "We are what we think. All that we are arises with our thoughts, and with our thoughts we make the world. And if we think, speak, and act with an impure, selfish mind, suffering follows us. And if we think, speak, and act with a pure mind of benefit for others, happiness follows us." And so he taught this at the beginning because he knew that his students may or may not understand suffering and their causes. And so he taught them to avoid the causes of suffering, which all stem from selfishness, and to cultivate the sources of happiness, which all stemmed from selflessness. And then after he taught what we call the first turning of the wheel of Dharma, he taught in a more progressive fashion about how to break the chains of hatred, anger, enmity, jealousy, pride, and all of the other negative mental afflictions through the practice of love. So in the second turning of the wheel of Dharma, the Buddha taught about bodhicitta, love and compassion. And he also taught about the bodhicitta that is an understanding of wisdom and the limitless nature of all things. Some people call it emptiness. Some teachers call it limitlessness. It's more a fullness of everything than it is an emptiness of something. And so the Buddha taught in the teachings on bodhicitta, he taught that mind is limitless. It doesn't have a color. It doesn't have a shape. It doesn't have a location. It doesn't have a beginning. It doesn't have an end. And in that way is empty of limitation, which is why some people use the word emptiness to describe this limitless quality of the mind. But because mind is limitless, it is full of potential. Because mind's limitless, it's full of potential. It's fullness. But we don't realize this. We're too busy clinging to our self-concept and not understanding our limitless mind. And instead, we, as one teacher said, we take our limitless mind, the biggest thing in the universe, and we cram it down into this tiniest thing ever, which we call me or I. And so we limit ourselves all the time by labeling ourselves as this or that. Sometimes we label ourselves as the best. Sometimes we label ourselves as the worst. They are both erroneous. And so through the second turning of the wheel of Dharma, the Buddha taught us how to feel love for ourselves and compassion for ourselves, and how to feel love for others and compassion for others. Because there are many, many people who don't know that they possess Buddha nature. Every being has Buddha nature, so everybody has intrinsic value. They don't have to earn, because every being has the potential to become a Buddha. And since every being has the potential to become a Buddha, we all have worth, and we all have value, and we all deserve respect. And so the Buddha taught harmlessness through love and respect, and through not harming. And so in this way, the Buddha's second turning of the wheel of Dharma, he taught about this bodhicitta. And we don't have time this morning to get into the substance of the third turning of the wheel of Dharma, but suffice it to say that it is not, it is saying that to label it, I will say it is the teaching that emptiness is empty of everything except Buddha nature. In other words, our limitless mind is not established as a thing, and yet it has the capability to know itself completely. And that's the capacity for Buddhahood, is mind, which is limitless, also possesses the capacity to know itself 100%, and knowing itself 100% to be liberated from all suffering. So therefore, the third noble truth, not the noble truth, the third turning of the wheel of Dharma, rather, has to do with this cultivation of an understanding of one's Buddha nature. We're not going to talk about that today. That will have to sit over here in the future shelf. Today we're going to talk about bodhicitta, the substance and practice of this second turning of the wheel of Dharma. In the second turning of the wheel of Dharma, the Buddha said that because selfishness is so insidious and so subtle, we have to use very subtle means to liberate ourselves from selfishness. I know that's a kind of a funny way of saying it, isn't it? Liberating ourselves from selfishness. Because selfishness is so much of a reflex. It's what we have been doing 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, forever. And everyone we have ever met is doing the same thing, or at least most of the people we've ever met are doing the same thing. They're exercising their selfishness, their self-concept, like, I am better than you, or you are worse than me, however they want to put that. Or sometimes people say, I am the worst of the worst of the worst. They're exercising a sense of self that the Buddha said is erroneous because they don't recognize that their mind has Buddha potential. If they knew their mind would have had Buddha potential, they would neither think that they were the best nor the worst. They'd be right in the middle. So, in other words, because Buddha nature is such a subtle concept, it's very subtle to think about Buddha nature, the Buddha chose instead to talk about the practices that awaken one's Buddha nature and uncover one's Buddha nature. And he said bodhicitta is the best way to eradicate the negative aspects of selfishness and to ripen the positive aspects of our Buddha nature. Here's an example. In Tibetan Buddhist literature about this second turning of the wheel of Dharma, it describes the topic that the Buddha taught on as bodhicitta. Bodhi means awakening, like Buddhahood. And citta means mind. These are Sanskrit words that come from the Buddha's Sanskrit scriptures. Bodhi means awakening, citta means mind. Holding the mind of awakening has two aspects. One is aspiration, the other is action. There's aspiration bodhicitta, and there's action bodhicitta. Aspiration bodhicitta also has two parts. There is the wish to benefit beings and the wish to accomplish Buddhahood. So, believe it or not, bodhicitta, Buddhahood itself, starts with a wish. A wish. Something that little children do. Little children wish. I mean, think of all the things you've ever wished for. I know some people still wish for ponies, right? But anything we've ever wished for. A safe home, loving people around us, enough resources, all of the things we've ever wished for, happiness, and so on, they start as a thought, as a wish. And so bodhicitta then starts as a wish. And what we're wishing for is not just our own happiness. We wish for the happiness of ourselves and all beings. And this is important. Because when a person wishes only for their own happiness, it's not complete and it's got a pitfall. I bet you can guess what the pitfall is. Selfishness. Right? Because if we wish for only our own happiness, we could fall into the mistake of working only toward our own happiness. We could fall into the pitfall. Whereas if we are wishing for the benefit of ourselves and others, that takes us out of the pit. Does that make sense? So the Buddha talked about what he called the twofold benefit. See, we're doing lots of twos today. The twofold benefit, which is the benefit of ourselves and the benefit of others. And so bodhicitta starts with the wish for ourselves and for others to be happy. That's it. It starts with that wish. May I be happy. May all beings be happy. And so that's why you see us say that a lot in our literature. We say, may all beings be happy. May all beings benefit. And we say that because that is the wish. We're articulating the wish that is at the heart of bodhicitta, the mind of awakening. Because when we're thinking about us, me, there's no room for bodhicitta or the mind of awakening to arise. Whereas if we start thinking of others, the moment we start thinking of others and stop thinking about our own self-interest, something new opens up for us, something expansive. Whereas selfishness can seem more constricting and almost claustrophobic, me, I, like we're putting ourselves in a little box. Wishing for the benefit of others is more expansive and it opens things up. And so that's the first thing. That's aspiration bodhicitta. And the first part of the bodhisattva vow is making the aspiration to be of benefit to all sentient beings. It's aspiring to attain enlightenment for their benefit. So when we're trying to attain enlightenment for ourselves alone, trying to attain the same state that the Buddha attained, this awakened state, awakened to the nature of suffering and the solutions to it, then if we can do that, if we can awaken to that, we want it not just for ourselves, we want it for others too, because everybody is suffering. These days, we've had a lot of problems in that there's a lot of attempts to divide the world we live in right now. Human beings, because we can discriminate between good food and bad food. It's a species technique. It's a species characteristic. We can detect good food from bad food, safe places from unsafe places, mostly, and safe behavior from unsafe behavior, mostly. But we don't stop. Our discriminating talent goes on overdrive, and we start discriminating against people for this stupid reason or that stupid reason or a stupid reason we make up. And then we divide ourselves and divide ourselves and divide ourselves until we look at everybody as though they were a threat to us. And so looking at everybody as though they were a threat to us is a problem because it divides the world. His Holiness the 17th Karmapa, in a talk in Kingston, New York, a few years ago, said, you know what the greatest threat to the world's harmony and stability is? He said, it's lack of love. It's lack of love. It's not like lack of resources. Yes, that too. But what is the heart of it? Lack of love. Because when we lack love, we don't share. We don't share our resources. We don't share anything if we're lacking in love. So he said, we need more love. And so bodhicitta, through wishing for the benefit of sentient beings, trains us in this love. Because when you take the bodhisattva vow, every day you restate your purpose. In the morning, you go before an image of the Buddha. And as with the Buddha as your witness, you say, I will make the aspiration to liberate myself and liberate all beings from the suffering of this world. And I will do it through the practice of love and compassion. So we make this training promise in the morning, every day. And we do it in the evening, every evening, and say, well, how did I do? And through this self-honesty and through checking up on ourselves. I mean, self-responsibility, self-accountability, by making ourselves accountable to ourselves for what we are and what we've been and what we're doing, it helps us to improve. And slowly, gradually, we learn how to apply that so that we're not taking an invisible stick and striking ourselves on the head and saying we're the worst. Because I know a lot of people, they tell me, they say, how can I stop beating up on myself? And I say, you can learn to be compassionate toward yourself. It's in the bodhicitta teachings, let's go. And then we learn how to have compassion for ourselves and love for ourselves so that we can take the right amount of responsibility for the things we've done, but not more than our share, which can push us into unhealthy places in our mind. So these practices of aspiration bodhicitta are the beginning of the bodhisattva vow. The second part of the bodhisattva vow is action bodhicitta. So if we want to act on those wishes, we have a path for acting on the wishes. And the path of action is what they call the six perfect virtues: generosity and ethics, ethical treatment of ourselves and others, patience, diligence, meditation, and wisdom. These six perfect virtues are how we practice and carry out the aspiration to become Buddhas. And so in this way, we have a full path in the bodhisattva vow. Practicing bodhicitta really becomes what we're going to do for the rest of our lives. And then even after if we would attain Buddhahood through this path, even afterward, well, what are you going to do now that you've become a Buddha? I'm going to Disney World. No, it's not like that. We're not doing that. No, we're not doing that. We're going to, as my favorite bodhicitta manual says, even after full Buddhahood is attained, there is nothing to do except to work. How does he put it? There is nothing to do except to work for the welfare of others with non-referential compassion, meaning unconditional love. Everybody wants to receive unconditional love, but how would it be to be able to give unconditional love? Wow. I mean, there's a talent we all want to train in. So that is what bodhicitta is. It's the training of the mind in love for oneself, love for others, and the establishment of the wish to practice and benefit others through the attainment of Buddhahood. We take a vow to that we're going to practice like that. We take a vow we're going to try to be generous. We're going to try to be ethical. We're going to try to be patient. It's a vow of training. It's not a vow that's saying, I'm perfect today. It's a vow that says, I'm going to train. In fact, the words of the vow actually said, just as the Buddhists of the past have trained and stage by stage accomplished the bodhisattva path, so too I will train in bodhicitta, and step by step I will progress, and as they did, I will become proficient. That's what the actual words of the vow say. So it's a vow of training. We're going to vow to train ourselves in a specific way. And we'll train ourselves in generosity and ethics and patience and diligence and meditation and wisdom. And by doing that, even if we don't get to Buddhahood in the next 3 weeks, that's a joke. If we don't attain Buddhahood in this lifetime, we will have made so much progress for ourselves and given ourselves the potential to experience so much happiness in this life. Because if we are a source of joy for other people, wow, what a life. If people, you know, you don't have to have $1 million for everybody to love you. You just have to be generous and ethical and patient. See where I'm going? And, you know, and diligent and practice mind meditation and be wise. So this is how we positively influence ourselves and the people around us. It's said that you could be an undercover Buddhist. Nobody would know. If they didn't ask you, nobody would know. They'd just say, well, that's a really nice person. That person's really good-hearted. And so that, to me, is like almost the highest praise that a human being can get, is that person is kind and I can trust them. And this is what this is about. It's becoming kind and trustworthy toward ourselves and becoming kind and trustworthy to others. So that's the path. And I'm really happy because I was able to introduce what bodhicitta is. I didn't talk about the other half of the bodhicitta teachings, which is about ultimate bodhicitta, because I wanted to make sure we spent extra time on the wish, the aspiration bodhicitta, and the action. Next week, I'll talk a little bit more about the ultimate form of bodhicitta, which is understanding wisdom and selflessness. We'll get to that next time. But for today, this is as far as I'm going to go. And since we are going to have a little bit of a sangha celebration here, like in the next 15 minutes, we're going to get started on that. I think I better stop here and do questions for maybe 10 minutes or so. And the question microphone is right over here. Because we're recording this for the podcast, if you wouldn't mind going to the microphone and asking your question there, that way everybody in the room can hear you, and then the folks who are listening to the podcast can hear you also. So you can get in line, and we'll just take as many questions as we can. Yes?
Good morning, Lama Kathy. Thank you for the teaching.
Thank you.
So a lot of good stuff in there, and I got kind of two questions. One, what's my first step?
Mm-hmm.
So if I were to take one action into this coming week, what would be a good starting point?
Kind of what I would do, there'd be two things I'd recommend. And one would be to, when you wake up in the morning, usually we're on autopilot, like, I gotta get coffee, or we're on autopilot, like, I gotta wash up, you know, whatever, or I gotta get the kids, or I gotta do this, or so usually when we wake up in the morning, we're on autopilot, and it's, the Buddha called this world of suffering, he had a name for it, he called it samsara. You know, it's cyclic existence, just keeps going. The suffering, I mean, because if there's no end to suffering unless people say, hey, time out, we're going to actually get wise now. So we can't time out samsara until after we practice for a while. But in any case, we usually wake up and we're on autopilot. I would say when you wake up this week, try to make your second thought, I mean, the first thought may still be coffee or washroom, but, you know, just think, make your second thought, may I benefit myself and all beings today? May I be able to practice the benefit of myself, taking care of myself, and may I be able, so that's the first thing I would recommend, that's how everybody, try to start every day that way. And then before you go to bed, instead of like staying up all night and thinking about my laundry list of stuff, Instead of doing that, as you go to sleep, think, may I benefit beings wherever I'm going in my dreams tonight? Because, you know, you're going someplace and you're doing something and you're seeing dream people, so you may as well be nice to them.
Okay. All right.
It's good training, you know.
Yes.
And then if occasionally, I'll add a third thing, and if occasionally during the day you can start thinking, how can I like really benefit beings? I'm going to have to start thinking about that. And that'll be the third thing.
Okay,
they call that the three excellences: excellent at the beginning, excellent in the middle, and excellent in the end.
Okay, and then a follow-on was: how do I avoid going into the unhealthy realm in my attempt to be beneficial to other beings?
Yeah. Yes. This is going to take a little thing called meditation and mindfulness, because if we're meditating and we're mindful, We will still make mistakes, but we'll be aware of them, and hopefully not in a bad way. We'll be able to be aware of them and say, oh, wow, I don't want to do that again, and so on. So I think that's the first thing that I would recommend, because if we're mindful, then we can say, go ahead.
Yeah, and I guess in that vein, is that being mindful of when it's appropriate to say no?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because as we're mindful, we can actually begin to see the contours of our day and the contours of our relationships and be able to differentiate. It's going to be a slow process. And by the way, I use the word pitfall, because every now and then you're taking a step and then suddenly you're below the sidewalk. It just happens. You know, there's a hole and you fall in. It's going to happen all the time, and the path of the bodhisattva is a path of trial and error. We're going to do it wrong a whole bunch. But what we watch for is selfishness. Because if you're mindful, you will watch for selfishness arising even in the midst of your trying to help somebody, because you want them to do what you want them to do. You want them to get well the way you want them to get well. And when you see that selfishness, you kind of go, oh, there you are again, selfishness. I got your number. Yeah. So it's kind of like that. Because if you watch for selfishness, you're going to start seeing it. First, you see it in other people. Let's be honest. First, we see other people being selfish. Oh, that person's so selfish. You know, oh, they're so rude. They're so selfish. Oh, but the problem is, I got a lot of friends in 12-step recovery, and they say when you're pointing your finger at a person, you got four fingers pointed back at you. So we have to look to our own mess. As well, you know. So anyway, it's so easy to see the others' mistakes, but we have to slowly see them and our own mistakes and not take excessive responsibility for them and just keep doing the next right thing. Because, see, I love 12-step because their slogans are shorter than the Tibetan Buddhist slogans. They're so much shorter than the Tibetan mind training slogans, and they're so true, right? Easy does it. You know, I mean, all of these things, they're so succinct and so pithy, you know. Anyway, so, oh, hi. Here's another question. Hi.
Hello. So in an effort to learn compassion for ourselves and others, mm-hmm. how can we, I guess, show or teach compassion to people that maybe don't want to learn compassion?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That are dividing us and yeah. are causing so much harm. Like, how do we give yeah. love to those people, I guess, is my question.
Yeah, and I really appreciate this question, and this will be the last question because I see that we're low on time. I want to give this some time. I think what you've said is really a good observation. We're being divided by people, and we just got to stop that. And I think what it is that people sometimes, they sometimes play up to our baser instincts. They try to encourage us to be baser. You know, they try to get us to go low and to be rude and cruel to each other. They try to encourage us to hate on each other. And I think that just as on the playground, haters gonna hate, I get that. But just as on the playground, we can say, you know what? I'm not playing. I think being able to stand on our own 2 feet and say, you know, I'm not playing that game. Because that, you know, what is it? What do they say? Eye for an eye makes us all blind. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Right.
You know, so I have a feeling that what we have to do is be able to just say, you know, I hear what you are saying, but how you are saying it, painting that other group of people or those other people as being evil, this is not good humanity. We need to rise above that. You see what I'm saying? It's almost like you can't always challenge people who want to hate because they don't like that. Because they're so lost in the power of their anger. Because people, when they feel anger, they have that rush, that brain chemical rush, and they think they're like invincible. So what you might try doing first is actually imagining that those people have happiness. You can make the wish, may you be happy, but yet first you may have to have them wish them a fine day and an excellent day elsewhere. You know, go have a nice day elsewhere. You know, I can't get close to you because getting close to you freaks me out. So have a nice day someplace else. Kempo Kartha Rinpoche, when asked about this, my teacher, he said, you should pray for such people. And the prayer you should say is similar to this. I won't be quoting it exactly because I don't have the text in front of me, but he said something like this. He said, Through the power of the wisdom of all the Buddhas of the 10 directions and 3 times, through the power of the wisdom of all those Buddhas, may this person gradually transcend their current limitations. May they gradually transcend their current limitations, meet genuine spiritual friends, enter the path, and gradually become enlightened. So for people who are haters, we don't tell those people, go to hell. Buddhists, we don't say that to the haters. We say, may you get enlightened. Okay? I know the way I said it is funny, but you know what I mean. So at first, we have to, part of how we rise above is by not hating ourselves. Not hating those other people. You see what I'm saying? Not hating them. And that's how we start to rise above. And so we pray for them. We wish them the best, even if it's at a safe distance from us. And if it's a person who we are close to, who we feel we can speak frankly to, we can actually say, you know what? I'm starting to think differently about all this. And just say, I'm moving on in my thinking. And I don't like, because other people are probably really excited that we hate each other. And that's making some bad people really happy because we're fighting. And so the best way to overcome those people who want us to fight is just to sit down and refuse. We're not going to fight. We're tired of that. We're not doing it. So to whatever extent we're able to do that, I think we can get a start.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you. Sorry we can't go on, but we will be able to pick this up next week, because next week, after we do our program for the Buddhist holiday, I'll be giving the second half of this talk and talking about about this aspiration and action bodhicitta in a little more detail, and also then talking about the ultimate practice of bodhicitta. And then I'll answer questions about the Bodhisattva vow also. And so if anybody has questions and you think of them, write them down, punch them into your phone, bring them, and then we'll do questions next week also. So we'll stop here for now. I'm super happy that you were here today for this sort of, we could call it New Year's Eve. I don't know. It's the day before Tibetan New Year. And so thank you for being here with us. And I hope you'll feel welcome to stay, because from the number of people in the room, looks like we got enough food, so we're good. So, but feel welcome to stay and listen to our update on our rebuilding project and on our Sangha Harmony projects and things like that. So let's sit quietly and dedicate the merit of this session. We dedicate the merit of this session to all suffering beings, making the aspiration that they are free from suffering, they come to happiness and then to Buddhahood. And may they become Buddhas, and becoming Buddhas, may they emanate in all directions and benefit sentient beings endlessly. We'll silently dedicate the merit with this thought in mind. Okay, thanks everyone.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling, or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.